You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast on WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in eastern Iowa and northwestern Illinois. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm very pleased to have as my guest today the state auditor in the great state of Iowa. He's Rob Sand. He was elected 4 years ago, and he was a guest of mine then, and he's back now. He did a rare thing in politics these days. He defeated an incumbent for that post, and now he's the incumbent seeking 4 more years. Rob, thank you so much for taking the time to be on.
Absolutely. I'm happy to be here, Robin. Looking forward to it.
Well, it doesn't seem that long ago, 4 years, but here we are, and you've been in office 4 years. What share with voters why they should return you to office?
Two bottom line statements, I think, and we'll get into details on it. But number one, we've uncovered more misspent money than any other auditor in their first term. And number two, we created a government efficiency program that is so good at saving taxpayer money, the state of Mississippi has already copied it. So I think the whole state of Iowa should be proud of that. We are now a leader in government efficiency because of the work our office has done under my leadership. We've had a couple of other accomplishments too. We added law enforcement officials to the office. The office, of course, does Iowa's public corruption investigations, which was how I first came to know it fairly well, was I was the state's public corruption prosecutor for the most part for 7 years when I was in the Attorney General's office. But we've now created a position and added folks in the office with a law enforcement background who graduated from the Law Enforcement Academy to help make sure our investigations are going to work in court. And the last thing I'd add is I really want to pursue public service, not partisanship. Our senior leadership in the office is a Democrat, an independent, and Republican. I have kept it that way throughout a few retirements. I have repeatedly promoted people, even into senior leadership, who actually made campaign contributions to my predecessor, that incumbent that you mentioned that I beat. I'm not the kind of person who wants to look at someone who supported my opponent and say, I'm out for retribution. I want to say, well, what can you do for the state? And if you're the right person for the job, I'd rather have a team of rivals, people who might go into the voting booth and vote differently, but who ultimately are trying to just do the right thing in the office. So if you're sick of bile, if you're sick of hatred, if you're sick of anger, if you want people who can actually set partisanship aside and do public service, then I'm your guy.
You know, I remember 4 years ago, it was your opponent set the terms of the campaign as a CPA versus an attorney, something like that. And I think you responded to that with your background in the Attorney General's office. But do you feel satisfied you've met those concerns with the performance you've had of being an attorney and using your background effectively in the office?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I would I'd say you could go to anybody who's worked in our office who is a CPA, who is an accountant, and they'd tell you know what? We've got so many accountants and CPAs in the office, it's a little bit more of a value add to bring in someone with some more legal experience to make sure we can do a little bit more of the compliance work that state law asks us to do. You know, there have been a handful of folks who have been a CPA, who've been state auditor, but most of them haven't. And so my background in terms of the investigative work is a good fit. My opponent this time around isn't a CPA and doesn't have an accounting degree. So it's not much of an issue this time around.
So, as I saw on your website, you mentioned under efficiency. I was very interested in your referencing small towns and rural areas, which, of course, has been a problem area for Democrats. But beyond just the political aspect, I think they feel, I live in a rural area, and we all feel a little underserved at times. Can you talk about that a little bit, what you've tried to do there?
Yeah, so a number of things come to mind. First off, statewide work, statewide jobs. Our office does statewide work. Most years we have a client in every county or very close to it. And so now we offer statewide jobs. Instead of concentrating the jobs, the economic impact of our office in the Des Moines metro area, which frankly doesn't need the help. We're letting people take their jobs anywhere they want in the state. So if somebody tells us, hey, I want to go live in Muscatine County, we say, great, we're going to assign you to audits mostly in eastern Iowa. You'll get home to see your kids more often. It's going to cost less for our clients because you're not going to need to get hotels as often when you're on the road. But the bigger piece there is that's a family that's moving to Muscatine. And that makes a big difference in a smaller town. When I was growing up in Decorah in Northeast Iowa, you know, I remember what it felt like when somebody moved to town or somebody moved away. And it's just not the same in Des Moines. Des Moines is doing fine. The metro area is doing fine. There are plenty of people working out, living for Des Moines. But if we're going to be state government, if we're going to serve the whole state, we should be trying to allow some of those jobs to end up in places that aren't Des Moines. So we've done that. And I think that's really good for smaller towns. We've also just made some changes in what we recommend for folks on issues that are just sort of an acknowledgement of the realities of rural living. A good example of that, we tell people all the time, hey, you know, our office has said this for decades, you can't make donations to nonprofits. And that's true. There's a prohibition in the Iowa Constitution. You're not supposed to take public dollars and make donations with them. But the reality in rural areas is there's a lot of times there you've got, you know, one food bank in a multi-county area. You've got one domestic violence shelter in a multi-county area. And so oftentimes you see tax dollars going there because it makes sense for the community in a multi-county area to support them. Well, what we've done is we've become a little bit more pragmatic about it. We've said, look, you're not supposed to make a donation. There is a lack of accountability with a donation. But here, draw up a contract, have it say these things. And if you get that contract put together, then you're going to be in better place, and taxpayers are going to have a little bit more transparency as to what's going on with their money.
I saw also you talk about accountability. Three things: nonpartisanship, efficiency, accountability. And that accountability one, I noticed you did some audits, some results of audits on Medicaid and COVID. I'd like you to share with our listeners kind of the results of both of those, because people are always concerned. Most people I talk to, most anyway, don't mind paying their taxes. You just kind of want it spent efficiently, and nothing burns them more when government wastes money away, regardless of party. What'd you find on those audits of Medicaid and COVID money?
Yeah, it's a good question. A number of things is the bottom line, but a big piece of that has been disappointment. We talked to medical providers. We did a random survey of medical care providers from around the state. Huge numbers of them said that the privatization of Medicaid has not delivered as promised. So we were told that Medicaid was going to be have an improvement to access to care and an improvement in quality of care after privatization. Less than 10% of medical providers think that happened. Less than 10%. The majorities of them actually think that it's gotten worse under privatization. And then we also looked at denials of care for the population that actually was privatized. And what we saw was an 891% increase under privatization in the number of Medicaid recipients who were wrongly denied care. And that's a huge number. Now, the administration wanted to quibble with it, so we reran the numbers using some of their suggestions. It was still a 500% increase. So you got these MCOs, managed care organizations, these private companies that came in that are now running Medicaid, who we hired allegedly for their expertise, who by and large do a much worse job of making accurate determinations about the kind of care that someone's supposed to get. Doesn't sound like a successful program from the facts that we have found.
What about the COVID audit that's also mentioned there? Just to kind of set the question up. I mean, the federal government was trying to address a severe national pandemic, people dying, trying to get money out as quickly as possible, not only in people's pockets, but also healthcare providers and all.
Yep. A number of issues there. you know, look, I the one you're probably referring to, we found two instances of misspent funds where Governor Reynolds put COVID funds into something that just wasn't a qualifying use. Look, there are rules in the world, and you should expect that an auditor of all people is going to talk about whether or not somebody followed the rules. She wanted to put $20 million into a software program for state government from the CARES Act. That was never in a million years going to be a qualifying expense, not just for one, but for two and maybe even three different reasons. And so we did our job. We said, hey, that's not right. You can't do that. We tried to do it quickly so that they could reallocate the dollars so we wouldn't lose that ability to invest in Iowa, and we were able to do that. And then at the same time, we warned the governor, hey, it looks like you're planning to put $500,000 into your personal staff. Doesn't look like that's probably going to qualify, and it would be very, very hard to make it qualify, even if you could. And I warned her about that. She went ahead and did it anyway, and the federal government then asked us to dig into it. We did, and found a lack of support and a lack of qualifying. So, again, these are things, you know, look, 750 restaurants went out of business during the pandemic in the state of Iowa. All of that money is money that could have gone to either grants or loans to small businesses around the state that were suffering because of the pandemic. And so to put it into this stuff just to me shows a lack of focus on what's good for Iowans.
I'm curious if you could share with our listeners, what is the scope of what your office does in terms of audits? I mean, it sounds like, I mean, as a taxpayer myself, it's great that somebody's looking at how money's spent, but do you, are your targets of your audit, of your audits pretty much set legislatively in statutes, or do you have some flexibility about who you decide to go audit?
So every state agency and department we audit every year. That includes universities. It doesn't include authorities. We're getting real nerdy here, Robin.
I love it.
Authorities are like the Iowa Economic Development Authority, the Iowa Finance Authority. We have two of them. So we don't audit them every year, but state agencies, state departments, we do. And then every county, every city with a population of 2,000 or more, they all get an annual audit. And then school districts get an annual audit. We might bid on those. We might want to do them, and then it's up to the entity to decide whether or not they want to hire us for that.
Well, I laughed when you said we were getting nerdy, but I for our listeners, this is serious stuff because again,
government, it really is.
Governments spend a lot of money, and we joke about it, but I know you take it seriously, and I do as well.
Yeah.
You know, that we, again, me, I don't mind paying taxes, just spend my money wisely. And it's just nice to know that there are entities out there that are trying to keep an eye on that.
Well, and this is really the mission of everything under the Constitution, self-governance, the idea that we don't need a dictator. We don't need a king or a queen telling us all what to do or what the law is going to be, that we can set up a system where we can figure it out ourselves. But if we want to trust ourselves, if we want to believe in our ability to govern ourselves, we want to have somebody riding herd on that government, trying to make sure that they're doing what the people want, trying to make sure that they're respecting those taxpayer dollars, right? Because there's a little bit of like a civic sacredness to your tax dollars, right? I mean, there should be. That's your sweat. That's your time away from your family. That's your sore back. That's your carpal tunnel. You name it. And if we're going to take that and put it into something that we believe we need to do together, well, we better take it darn seriously and try to do a good job with it. And I think that that nerdiness can be important. And it's, you know, in a way, important for all of us as citizens to be willing to get into the details on some of this stuff so we can make sure that we understand what's going on with our money.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is Iowa State Auditor Rob Sand, a Democrat who's running for re-election. We've been talking a little bit about his reasons for running and some of the responsibilities in his office and his major accomplishments in his first term. I'm curious, in this age of just hyper-partisanship in both parties, many people in both parties just detesting each other and voting against that party instead of their own. You come out right and you wear it proudly. You're a brand that transcends party lines. Do you get pushback from Democrats for being too nice to Republicans in that sense? Or
I get pushback from both parties on all kinds of things. And yes, that would be one form of specific pushback. But I also don't quibble about what my views are. You know, I'm when it comes to sticking up for American democracy, I think elected leaders in the Republican Party have abandoned their obligation to check each other. Right? How can an elected official in the Republican Party claim to love this country and yet not stick up for its foundation by saying that we can run legitimate elections in this country? Right? I mean, the National Republican Party, its elected leaders, just removed Liz Cheney from leadership for the crime of sticking up for American democracy. And so the leaders of that party should be ashamed. And I'm not going to quibble about that. I'm not going to make bones about that. But that said, look, that doesn't mean that that is the only issue that exists. That does not mean that every single Republican out there marches in lockstep on that issue. And there's a great quote. I don't remember who said it, but it was, you know, something to the effect of, you know, work with any man to do good and no man to do evil. We can't just start whittling away at what groups of people we will refuse to work with to get something good done. Because pretty soon we're going to find ourselves with so few friends and so few citizens willing to engage with us that we can't accomplish much. So I see this as it's kind of a common sense approach. To me, it's kind of the only way forward. It doesn't mean you compromise your values, but it means that you set aside disagreements and you focus on the places where you agree. Robin, are you married?
No.
All right. Well,
bad example.
We've all fair enough. We've all been in one relationship or another. It doesn't matter if it's your spouse or your significant other or your parent or your child, right? If you get up every day in that relationship and you immediately start picking at the thing that you never are going to agree on, your life is going to suck. You're going to be unhappy. You're going to be full of arguments, and you are not going to get a lot of the good stuff done that you could do if you focus on areas of agreement. And yet we look at our political system, which I think is just so profoundly broken, and we allow that, and we expect it, and we almost encourage it. It's like a blood sport at this point where you see people, you know, cheering for their team, conceiving of it not as public service, but as one party trying to beat the other. We're not going to get to a better place by doing that. We're not. Because what ends up happening when you have that level of partisanship is it becomes less about one party versus another and more about insiders versus outsiders. Okay, congratulations. You've just purged the other party and become a one-party state. You know what a one-party state is? China. You know what it becomes up, what it comes to at that point is not whether or not someone has the right values, but whether or not they're the insider, whether or not they can pull the levers of power to win themselves and their friends more favors. So we've got to get back to a point where we are focused on integrity, where we are focused on accountability, where we actually have an electoral system that lets us reflect upon more than the letter behind somebody's name. I think that's also just very achievable at the same time, too.
Well, and I think you're living proof of that. And I'm not taking sides or supporting you or opposing or anything, but I think I was going to put in a question form, but it's obvious. In the last election, you know, Kim Reynolds won. Other folks won while you defeated other Republicans a Republican incumbent. So my question was going to be, are there enough voters out there in the middle in quote so-called independents that still can swing back and forth? And it's obvious in Iowa that there are, because you're living proof of it.
I'm a big believer that there are. 2022 is not 2018. Nothing has been written that is final about how this year is going to end out. Obviously, there was a special election last night that got people thinking maybe it's going to be better for Democrats than what they thought it was going to be. We don't know. But at the end of the day, I am a believer that there's a decent chunk of people in the state of Iowa who really just, they don't like partisanship. They don't like politics as usual. They're looking for people who are trying to just do public service. And hopefully my faith is well placed, and because I think my record shows that that's what I've done, and hopefully I'll be rewarded for that. If not, I'll be unburdened.
Well, it's interesting you use the word faith, because I know in the last campaign, and there were several profiles of you that talked about you and your faith, and also the fact that you're a hunter and you identify as a bow hunter, proudly as a bow hunter. And, you know, I bring this up just because the Democrats have struggled with getting votes of people of faith and hunters to some degree.
Yeah.
And you kind of run against the grain in several areas. And I think it's admirable. And I think Republicans that run against the grain is admirable too. But I guess, do you feel that you know, is that helping your popularity, the fact that you got elected, or are people voting you in spite of that? Or how do you, or does that even play a role in how people vote?
So, you know, certainly it does for some. For how many, it's hard to say. Anytime I make a comment about my faith on social media, the most common response is, please leave your faith out of it, which, you know, look, it's a huge motivator in my life. It's a huge part of who I am and how I approach the world. And I think letting voters know who you are is important. I think there's a lot of people out there who voted for Donald Trump, who would be happy to vote for someone who wasn't necessarily a Christian if they talked about how their faith or their lack of faith informed their life or informed their values, who just opened up and let people get to know them. So I can't tell you, you know, I don't know the answer as to whether or not it helps or hurts, but it's just something that's important to me. Bow hunting is a passion of mine. I gun hunt too. I am a gun owner. And I enjoy that, but there's really something, another level for me about being out there with a bow. It's so much more difficult to fill your tag. It's so much, you are so much closer to the game that you're looking to tag. And it's just something that I enjoy at a much higher level. I would call it kind of the difference between you know, a hobby versus a passion.
Getting back to some of the more nitty-gritty of politics, it seems like the key area in Iowa, it used to be perhaps maybe the suburbs around Des Moines, and that's still important, but my reading of it, and I correct me if I'm wrong, is these river counties right here where we're located, which seems to be going under a change. You did well in them, but most Democratic candidates had not. And as you know, Iowa had the most Obama-Trump counties of any state in the nation. And most of those counties stayed with Trump along the Mississippi River here. I think all of them did. Do you still see that as kind of the key swing area? Or is it the key swing area in the state? How are you approaching that this time?
You know, I'll anyone who wants to give me their vote, no matter where they live in the state, I'll thank them for it. And certainly, we've seen a lot more of the river counties move back and forth. Northeast Iowa, I'm from Decorah, kind of the heart of that Obama-Trump country. I think that's who I am. That's the people I grew up with. And certainly it is the swingiest. So in that sense, you know, for the time being, it sure looks that way. But 2022 again is unwritten. We'll see where things go from here. I go wherever people invite me and talk to them about whatever they want to talk about. You know, I do instead of 99 county tour, I do the 100 town hall tour. So I hit every county, but I do one extra just because I'm competitive. And it's fun to do that. But I do it with advance notice to the public. Some folks like to sneak in and out of town before you even know they were there. We try to get everybody ahead of time, letting them know, hey, we're going to come to town, you know, come out. And if people want to come and yell at me, they're welcome to do that. We work hard in our office to try to get the right answer. Like I said, Democrat, independent, Republican. And so typically people, even if they don't know what the answer is, even if they're upset at me about something, I typically have a reasonable answer for why we did what we did, and they may not have heard it. And so I like it when people come out who have something they disagree with me on. It's a more interesting conversation every time, I tell you that.
We've got time for one more question, a couple minutes here, but I've got to bring this up because I had as a guest about a month ago, Dan Glickman, the former Secretary of Agriculture, who talked about the importance, and he almost used the word necessity, of having a sense of humor in politics. That's sorely missing for both most people. And I bring it up because, again, you mentioned, quote, you dare to have fun. Do you think that's a key to your success? I mean, I agree with Glickman, and I agree with you. I think we're lacking that. So many people on both sides run around like constipated, you know.
Yeah, I look, it's certainly a much more fun way to go through life, being willing to laugh at it, right? My family laughs a lot. I grew up in a home that laughs a lot. My dad's side, he grew up in Decorah as well, so lots of aunts and uncles around and lots of laughter. Sometimes you're laughing so you don't cry, but sometimes you're laughing just because it's funny. And I think the more we can recognize the humor in life, the better equipped we are to get through it in a way that, you know, we can keep our wits and our ethics and our morals with us until the end. And the fundamental reality is, you know, Robin, can you name more than three other Iowa State auditors? Honest question.
No.
Yeah. So I'm the 33rd. A lot of people have held this job. A lot of Iowans can name, you know, a couple handfuls of governors or U.S. senators, and that's where the list stops. Every one of these jobs is stewardship. And, you know, hopefully you don't sue for such a bad job that people 100 years from now know your name. But some of that is just having a long-term view. You know, in the long run, we're all dead. And I think it's a dangerous thing to forget that, because if you forget that, you get so wrapped up in what you're doing and so wrapped up in the here and now that you make decisions or you do things that you might come to regret. I don't want to be that kind of person. You know, if voters unelect me in November, I'm going to say, well, thank you. I've got more time to hunt, more time to spend with my kids. And when we get too invested in this stuff, it's dangerous. And I think humor is a good way to help us remind ourselves that there are bigger things in life than what is in front of us just one day at a time.
Well, I'm glad we ended up on a positive note instead of the Galbraith quote. But well, Rob Sands has been our guest today on Heartland Politics. Rob is the state auditor of Iowa, up for re-election. And Rob, thank you so much for being on.
You bet. Thanks for having me, Robin.
Heartland Politics is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. If you enjoyed this conversation, you can hear more on the Heartland Politics podcast, available at WVIK.org, in the WVIK app, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.